Hey everyone, welcome to Cloud Masters. Today, we're here to talk about those pesky egress charges. This episode idea came out, I think, Matthew, correct me if I'm wrong, but just some general observations we've made over a number of tickets and customers that we've worked on, just lots of mistakes and anti-patterns made that just blew egress charges through the roof. That's correct, right? And so I guess I'll mention the guests. We're joined by Sale Matthews, Matthew Richardson, and Louis Muller. They're all senior cloud architects at Duit, helping customers with lots of things around data, both on Google Cloud and AWS. And so in this episode, we're going to talk about lots of anti-patterns that we've noticed customers make, we're going to describe why it's a mistake and what you should do instead. So Sale, why don't you kick us off? I think the first mistake is when you want to do real-time data updates. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, yeah. Generally, when you're doing egress, you've got data you're loading from some location. Maybe you're going from an S3 bucket, a GCS bucket. You're putting that into something, BigQuery, some database, some data store, anything like that. And generally, you've got some egress charges as well as probably some access charges there. And a lot of customers get stuck in the mindset of, I need real-time data, I need real-time data, real-time data. But the reality is they don't need real-time. They need quote-unquote real-time, which is generally maybe you need it once a minute, every 30 seconds. You don't need sub-second, millisecond-level data to be loaded. Due to this, they think they need it so fast, they're loading this thing every 2 seconds, 3 seconds, just doing thousands of loads every minute, when instead you can do one or two loads a minute to get the data, the freshest you need. So therefore, you're just jacking your costs insanely because you've got 1,000 times more loads than you need. And there's your egress charges going with that. And just think, if you're able to go once a minute and it costs you, say, $2 US dollars to load it, for per minute when you do one load, but if you did it 100 times a minute, that's 200 US dollars. So, I mean, there's a huge chunk of difference there by you do one load versus 100. So you just got to decide how fresh you need your data. Do you need it to be every second, or do you need it every minute, or maybe every 30 seconds? But if you're loading it a ton more, then you're spending a lot more money than you need to. And it's good to just look at your root data. How often do I need this data? How fresh does it need to be? Do I really need it to be real time, or do I need it to be pseudo real time, which would be, like I said, like once a minute, maybe every 30 seconds. And by just reducing the amount of times you're loading your data and pulling your egresses out, or maybe even pushing it out from one place to another, that's additional costs. And if you reduce the number of times you're doing that, you're reducing your egress costs pretty significantly. And we see a ton of customers get that mindset, and they're spending way more than they should on egress charges as well as access charges and extract charges and everything else that goes with that.
Well, that was the point I was just about to jump in on, the access charges. I mean, I had a customer, and I think we spoke about this on one of the first podcasts we did, had a customer that was pulling very small amounts of data, but pulling it every couple of seconds. And it was actually the API cost from that S3 bucket or GCS bucket, whichever it was. It was the API charges that were the higher. It wasn't actually a lot of data. They weren't storing much. But querying that data hundreds of times a minute instead of, like you said, putting it in a cache or querying it, you know, semi-regularly, it makes an incredible difference. In terms of BigQuery, so you guys all know on this call, and I've said it before, I'm not the data guy. Is it something where you're better off just leaving it in BigQuery to go stale for a couple of minutes, or is it a case of, is there some sort of caching layer that we can employ?
Yeah, I'd say just leave it in BigQuery unless you need to pull it relatively often. I mean, there's a couple caching solutions you can do for BigQuery. BI Engine's a big one. BigQuery's got an internal one that if you don't really need it very often, just throw it in BigQuery. Don't worry about caching it.
I guess it doesn't solve anything to do with real-timedness of the data. Talking about stale data if it's cached.
What would be the AWS equivalent of that, just in case we have some AWS listeners? Leave it in S3?
I mean, loading data from S3, I guess you're talking more like direct comparison to BigQuery, be more Redshift, right? And that's, it's a different model because Redshift stores the data in its own database on the disk. So
got it. To me, this reminded me of, we did a couple episodes ago, we had some TAM, technical account managers, join us and reminded me, I think the takeaway here is kind of match your infrastructure to your actual business requirements. Do you need real time or do you need quote unquote real time, as Sale mentioned? And so it's, the recommendation here is kind of like an evaluation.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. No, I just wanted to say actually, because the other week we were the customer and they were also a very hard requirement on like having it real time. So I asked them about the use case until I'm like, so do you want users to sit there and constantly click so they can see the data coming up to make decisions that quickly? They're like, no, we don't need that. Like, what is the SLA? Like a few minutes. So it's always trying to understand like it's because sometimes real time means different things for different customers. But I mean, yeah, Sale was pretty much spot on in just making sure that do they really need it or not. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the worst culprits we see on BigQuery cost optimizations is often streaming inserts as well, when often a lot of customers could just load everything in batch and save themselves a lot of money in the process. And as well for egress charges as well, it can also be linked in there as well. If people are doing streams from one region to another, it can be very expensive without you knowing. So yeah, there's quite a lot of pitfalls we see there in cost op sessions that do it.
The next culprit or next anti-pattern, I think this one's for you, Matthew, but you know, migrations involve massive amounts of data transfer. Do you see customers making mistakes there? Just in terms of performing the migration?
Yeah, so one of the worst mistakes I see with data migrations on a regular basis in EMEA, and I'm sure every region that do it has the same problems, right? Is when customers pick the wrong services to even do the migrations with. Like a lot of the time, people don't see the hidden charges, which I think Sale and I and Louis are going to cover later on in this podcast. But there's a lot of hidden charges that are coming into play with a lot of services, and some of the data transfer tools that may have been legacy, or maybe people have built because they were the first thing they were demoed maybe by AWS or Google, often have hidden charges in place that we don't realize when we're doing the egress from system to system. Like with maybe some of the data transfer services, I've seen a few of the Google customers in the past that have done running a transfer service from maybe a bucket in one region into BigQuery, for example, and they may not have seen some of the hidden charges in some of the egress charges through the service that they're using. Because maybe processing data in some ways maybe uncompressed, or like in a way that's loaded all the data from one place to another, is going to have a lot higher charges than what they were shown in the basic demo, or when they maybe ran the calculator, they thought it was going to be very cheap, but the loading methods may have been a lot more expensive than they thought it was going to be. So it's quite a common problem we see, and yeah, something that we often need to advise customers about on a regular basis. I had one last week on just that, where I had to reach out to one customer that by using one of the BigQuery transfer solutions, it was actually quite expensive because of some of the egress charges in the background. So yeah, it's something that's really a lot of customers need to be careful of.
What did you recommend like that customer to do instead in this case?
So the main thing to think about is basically figuring out firstly what data you actually need to transfer, like maybe transferring just everything in bulk is maybe not the best solution. In this case, we basically recommended some of the new Big Lake functionality was better for them. A lot of the time, they were able to just get the data transferred in GCS and just access it as external tables in this customer's case. And they were compatible with some of the new Big Lake functionality. That saved them a lot of money from doing a region-to-region shift into BigQuery, should I say. So this was the recommendation in this customer's case. But yeah, there's a lot of ways around it. It's all about looking at all your options, whether that be using BigQuery Omni for maybe some of the Big Lake solutions, or whether you do actually need to move the data into BigQuery, in which case you've got to look at which service has the lower charges associated with it, because BigQuery and even Cloud Spanner, as we're about to talk about later, some of the database services are introducing a lot more aggressive egress charges now. So it's always about figuring out what exactly you need to transfer and how much you actually need to avoid as much of that egress charge as you need as you can.
Now, we're going to get the databases later on, but I want to switch to cloud storage. So that's a big part of any architecture, I think. So I want to know, you know, how do services like GCS, S3 factor into egress costs? Louis, Sale, I think you guys have some stories around this. or some nightmare scenarios?
So one of the most common ones I've seen is if there's a lot of data that needs to be loaded into the specific service from S3, especially if you've got your raw unstructured type of data you need to load into like Redshift or so, for example, right? So those data, if you transfer that like in a more public type of way, it's going to cost you a lot of charges with this egress and stuff. So one of the best practices we tend to tell customers to avoid, and we had this issue actually last week, is to utilize VPC endpoints, which basically means the traffic is not routed publicly, but is still maintained privately and internally to where your resources are located. So you don't have to pay that crazy public type of routing costs. And two areas, so S3 is the one where I see it often, because I mean any big data or modern data platform utilizes blob storage and stuff like S3, right, in the AWS ecosystem. And the other one I've seen, this is more on the container side, but is if they start pulling down a lot of like fairly large type of container images on a regular basis, like ECR, for example, which is AWS's container registry. So again, you can use private endpoints for all those things. So it doesn't have to be routed publicly, and so you can make it cheaper. And it's also not that complicated to set it up as well. But yeah, Sahil, I mean, yeah, if there's anything missing or anything you can add on that end.
Yeah, I mean, exactly what you said. I mean, just same goes for AWS and GCP. If you just got to watch where it is. I mean, GCP doesn't have the concept of the endpoints, S3 endpoints and everything. But it does have the concept of moving across regions. And that's the one thing in GCP that's a big thing we see a lot of times is customers will throw something, and we'll cover this a little bit later with the BigQuery in one of our next questions, but a lot of customers will throw data into a bucket that may not be in the same region they're consuming with, which we see all the time. BigQuery, they're trying to load from into BigQuery from, like, maybe they're in US Central 1 for the BigQuery, but they're going from US West 2 on their GCS bucket. And there's an egress charge there because it goes across regional boundaries. Or if you're going from like EMEA to the US, you're trying to move it, there are going to be charges going from that. But even if you're going on the same continent, there's still a charge going from one region to another. So you got to make sure you keep your data localized where you're needing it, so you're not paying additional egress charges, which is a big one that a lot of customers don't catch. And a lot of times you'll just look at your billing and say, wait a second, I've got this egress charge here, but my data is living in this bucket. It's in US West 1, but I'm pulling a US Central 1. Why am I getting this charge? And that's why. It's because you're going across regional boundaries. And it's something that not easy to find, but it happens.
One of the biggest cost surprises I've seen with customers is when it comes actually to this hidden type of data transfers, especially the inter-AZ type of ones. Not sure if you wanted to have a chat about that, Natan, but...
Just before we do jump onto that one, I want to go back to one point you made there, Louis, which is a really key one, I think, that a lot of our customers don't necessarily all know. And that is around the VPC endpoints or the private endpoints in AWS. A lot of people think that if they're using an EC2 instance and they call a thing from S3, that everything's staying inside the AWS network. And that technically is true. It's not going across a public wire out on the internet, but AWS charges it as if it was, right? And there's a very fine distinction there, that the data's staying secure and it's staying in the network and it's nice and fast and all that wonderful goodness, but you're paying as if it went out on the public interwebs, and therefore you're paying that higher data transfer charge. And that can be a real killer. It's not specific just to S3. It's anything that's got a VPC endpoint in AWS, you should be using it, or in almost every situation, because it will keep things much more internal, especially when it comes to what you're being billed for. It's a really good call out.
And note for any GCP listeners, that GCP designed their system completely different.
Look, I mean, we can talk about the way that GCP changed their regional GCS bucket billing charges there last year.
Yeah, they've been changing their charge and make sure they get their money out of it for either way.
Yeah, I think that's kind of related to the inter-AZ thing that we're talking, regional zone traffic that you were beginning to talk about, right?
Yeah, so for me, the inter-AZ, so now that customers are sometimes getting aware about moving things between two regions can be quite expensive, it could be neglected that something as small as the two AZs within a region, when you're moving stuff across between services, it doesn't it's not that obvious that it will incur any charges and so straight up. So this is one of the hidden type of things that can really surprise you, is this inter like AZ type of charges. And basically, to give you an example of this, is like, if you do any data transfers, like let's say you're transferring 500 gigabytes like from one AZ, like an EC2 instance to a Redshift cluster or of that, you're gonna have an ingress and an egress charge for that transfer. And if, and let's say you even are in the same AZ, this can be a tricky one. Say, let's say you're in the one AZ and you've got two different VPCs and you're using like a peering connection. And say you want to move workload data between one VPC to another one, even in the same AZ, using the KIP, the peering connections, that also actually incurs some charges, even though in the same AZ. So it's a bit of a, it is a bit of a tricky one. And I mean, I can, on the data side, just to give you an example, what I've seen a lot of streaming workloads, what customers tend to do. So I've got a bit of a love-hate relationship with Kafka. It's great if it's working, but if it's not working, it's like, there's a lot of things I would rather do than troubleshoot a Kafka cluster. So what I've seen, when customers use these streaming services, there's a lot of data that moves around between AZs if they want like a high available type of solution, right? But also their consumers and producers, all these clients that generate these data is sometimes outside of the same AZ where they actually need to interact with. So to give you a good example, a few weeks ago when working with a customer, they use MSK, which is a great managed service for Kafka, but there's a bit of a trick there. So on the pricing, the traffic between the brokers, so just a quick overview, so Kafka has got like three brokers, which is like three compute nodes, I would say, under the hood, right? And one is in each AZ if you want a highly available distribution. So if it needs to replicate data amongst each other, all that, it's free and it is actually included in the price. However, if you've got clients like consumers and producers that need to talk to those brokers, which is outside of that specific AZ, then you're going to get paid, and then you can get billed a lot for those inter-AZ charges. And that's not always very obvious at first. So there's actually this one cool tweak we made for a customer, and it reduced their transfer about 40 or 50%. It was called, I know it's very specific to MSK, but it was called Rack Awareness. So it's a little config that means that where your client is, it just needs to fetch, or it just needs to produce or fetch data from the closest copy of that data. It doesn't have to fetch it from the main repository or area where it's on in a different AZ. So that means if your client and the copy is in the same AZ, it can just fetch it from there, which means, again, doesn't have to cross AZs. So it's stuff like that, especially on the MSK side with the inter-AZ traffic, which is not obvious in the beginning. Yeah,
multi-AZ is such a powerful thing in terms of business availability and so on. But I remember one of my worst ever architectural reviews with a customer many, many moons ago. It was pre-Do-It. But they were running EMR in a multi-AZ setup. So AWS EMR is a managed Hadoop, right? Typically, you set it up, you process a set of data, and then you save the data somewhere else. They were doing that, and the EMR nodes were sharing data between them as to where they were up to in the processing and so on, which meant they were paying a huge amount in data transfer because they were doing big data jobs, right? I mean, that's what it's made for. It's on the tin. It's, I think sometimes in these situations, and it's the same with Kafka, not necessarily EMR, but the multi-AZ needs to be looked at as a cost of business. And do you need that high availability or not? There are sometimes you definitely do. And the same as if you were running that on-premise and you had another data center with extra Cisco switches and racks and routers and all the things, you pay for it. And I think sometimes people tend to look at the cloud and go, because it is there, I'm going to do it, instead of actually checking if it's required for the business.
Of course, I know sometimes when, like, if they're running these streaming workloads, if they can recreate the data, or they're pulling like from public APIs, like some of the stock data and stuff, which, or even some monitoring data, that they could lose like some data for it. Like, yeah, it depends obviously how sensitive the data and stuff is, but I have seen sometimes where they can recreate the data easily and it's not critical if they lose it, so they don't have to have crazy high availability with a lot of brokers who know it's split. Yeah.
I think it leads to the biggest thing is decide. Also, one of the big cost factors is multi-AZ, multi-region, whatever you want to call it on the cloud. If you need it, you may need it, but it's going to cost you extra. There's going to be replication charges. There's going to be egress charges and everything else. But that's going to be, like I said, cost of doing business and kind of decide if you need it or not. Because a lot of times you really don't need to put your data all over the world or in multi-regions. It can be fine in one little area, one AZ, one zone, one region, whatever you want to call it in your cloud, that otherwise you're going to be paying costs to move it around no matter what you're doing. So that's a big thing you've got to consider.
And this is a big point for the database, so the conversation we'll be having later as well. I mean, even something as simple as having a multi-AZ setup on a database structure in GCP or AWS can be very costly, as we'll probably get to later with some of the spanner changes later with the additions. But I won't steal everyone's thunder for that later.
While we're talking about the load balancing, what about containerization? Not containerization specifically, but containers and workloads that are, you know, deployed in that beautiful multi-high availability sort of setup. Are there any traps that you see customers falling into that maybe they're spending too much on the data transfer, specifically like with load balancers and stuff?
I was just waiting. Somebody else is going to.
I was waiting for that as well.
So on the container side, again, last week, a similar customer that had issues with data transfer in general on data services, they also had some things on the container side, right? So they run their EKS or Kubernetes pods and all that stuff in AWS. And I saw Sam is still laughing. That he's probably going to get edited out anyway. So basically, they want to understand like what's going on, right? But one problem they didn't have from the start is having proper observability and tracking and stuff in place. So they just saw these massive data transfer bills. So what we did was just as a quick way to help them, we said, listen, let's take a look at Cost Explorer. Let's just drill down to the specific account, region, service, resource, then you can see the instances or the compute that is actually causing these things. But so you can have an idea from where it's coming from and where it's landing to. But to understand the actual applications and stuff, that's where there's going to be some engineering effort involved to have some proper metrics and tracking for your network activity between applications. A few things when we actually work with a customer is that identify which are one of the top, I would say, some of the what they call chatty applications, which actually talks a bit more, and see if you can actually, do they have to communicate across the AZs and stuff like that? Can't they just communicate within the same AZ? And I think this comes down to, again, do you really need multi-AZ or not? Because multi-AZ for container workloads with those traffic can get very expensive. So long story short, it was just having the tracking and observability in place, and also have proper tagging and stuff, so you can just understand the workload and where it goes to.
Maybe we can, because it's kind of related, so I don't want to, while we're on this topic, Matt, you invented a new word, I think, regionalization, or excessive regionalization, a new term.
I think that word may have already existed, to be fair, but I'm from Stoke, words often get lost in translation. Weird version of English we speak over here.
I'm just happy you spelt it with an S instead of a Z.
I prefer the Z's, but or Z's, but yeah. Let's just jump to that. I know it's kind of out of maybe the planned order, but let's jump into excessive regionalization as a don't.
Yeah. So this is something I've seen a lot of in very larger customers that we have. So a lot of the times you've got various teams across the business where maybe they've just thrown data. I mean, I think Sale alluded to this earlier, where maybe data's been thrown into an S3 bucket in a completely random region somewhere, like US West, and their main data lake, their data warehouse activities is all run through US Central perhaps. And yeah, by just basically having that unnecessary regionalization of the way your data is stored, if you're running a lot of data migration activities on that data, or you then need to start joining that data together in a various ETL tools, various tools that way, whatever you use, you're gonna hit egress costs somewhere basically by not managing your data correctly, by basically just throwing everything in one particular place maybe, or somewhere where it shouldn't have been. So yeah, a lot of the time people can often see charges around that, as we alluded to earlier, by just basically just throwing stuff anywhere, basically, and hitting the egress charges off the back of that. So whenever you're running stuff in GCP or AWS, you're going to see the same problems. Like, I mean, whatever service you use, if you're using BigQuery Data Transfer Service or using just a standard federated job or something, like you're just doing anything to bring data from one region to another. Sometimes it can be just due to, yeah, just something being in a random bucket. Like I had one customer recently where they just had thousands of data of objects they needed to bring into BigQuery. And it turned out a lot of their data was stored in Europe and their main BigQuery data warehouse was in the US. So a lot of the time they had to basically devise a way to get around that. And that can be quite an unexpected problem to have, especially when you don't realize that some of that data is even there in the other buckets. So yeah, I just wanted to highlight that as a major point, that it all comes back to just managing your data architecture, making sure you get everything right in the first place. Or if you don't, you've got to find a way around it, which can be quite ugly when you're moving thousands of files around to another region. It can get very ugly. So yeah, just wanted to make that point on this podcast.
And also, just a quick question from my side, sorry, I will stop talking then. One thing to note as well, when moving all these data and stuff as part of your modern data architecture, or when you need to do migration and stuff, like the data format and stuff and compression and all those things also plays a significant role, right, for the bandwidth that you actually will pay for the transfer, right?
Yeah, certainly. So definitely in the GCP world and under the AWS world, yeah, data compression is very big. I mean, yeah, if you're not, especially in BigQuery, for example, I mean, even getting your file formats right can really save you a lot in terms of moving data into BigQuery and on egress charges as well. I mean, BigQuery does well with Parquet, more structured file formats. If you've got your data in the wrong format or even uncompressed CSV files, perhaps, you might find a lot of hidden charges again that way, as you say, by just having your data in the wrong format, just maybe not the right format for the data in the first place. That's a very big call out.
Quick note just on that. Most of the modern data tools, BigQuery, Redshift, Snowflake, ClickHouse, etc., all of them can load compressed data too. So it's pretty much in your best interest. Store your data compressed. You're going to save money on storage costs and egress charges, and then let them deal with the compute as part of the service. So just a thing to think about as well.
So, I mean, as the lay guy here on the data side, are we saying then that if you've got time to plan it, and if you really need to like permanently move your data from one region to another, if you've made that decision, if you've realized that you're running your BigQuery or Redshift in the wrong region, then the plan would be to compress it as well as you can first, spend the extra on the compute in region to do that, then move it, and then if need be, if your tool needs it, then you can decompress it. But most of those will be able to read what you've got.
Yeah, I think as Sale was alluding to there, most modern data warehouses can cope with compressed files. So like you say, at the end of the day, that's definitely the best thing to do if you are going to move that kind of volume of data from one region to another, like the European customer I had the other month doing just that. That's what they needed to do.
Going maybe slightly away from databases to networking, any mistakes you see customers making when working with CDNs? They're, you know, around load balancing and whatnot.
Yeah, I can throw a couple of things in there around the CDN piece. It's actually in most clouds cheaper to use CDN than it is to use GCS or S3. So for example, and I'm talking here specifically about the native product to each cloud provider, not using Fastly or Akamai. But if you're using CloudFront with AWS, then the data transfer from EC2 to CloudFront is free. And then the data transfer from S3 to CloudFront, and then from CloudFront out to the internet is cheaper than it is directly. So even though S3 is a web protocol, if you can offload that data transfer out in your application, whatever it is, if you can set up your cloud, your CDN to pull the data from that, then or your application, sorry, to pull the data from the CDN, then you're going to be saving money without actually having any problems. And in fact, you probably end up with better performance because these things are designed for transferring data around the world, right? And caching and all those sorts of things. So, I mean, the biggest mistake that I see with CDNs is people not using them for use cases when they make sense. And sometimes they're not quite so obvious.
And I know with CloudFront, not to quote the exact type of numbers, I think it might be around like 50 terabytes you get for free or so, which is actually not bad. That's a lot. So even with that, you can get away with caching a lot of your static content and saving on transfer costs. Yeah.
Matt, I think you kind of alluded to this earlier, and Sam, I think your ears are going to perk up because we're going to talk about tagging. You mentioned earlier, you hinted, I think, at the customer, or maybe it was someone else, but like lack of effective tagging, tagging of the process when you're doing data transfers and stuff like that. So could you talk more about that? What have you seen customers do or not do, and what should they do?
Yeah, so I think it was Louis who alluded to it earlier with the load balancing piece. But basically, yes, one thing that I see as well of a lot of customers doing is basically not auditing a lot of their files for transfer. So a lack of tagging with a lot of their data transfer processes. Now, this can be a big thing with like data that needs to be maybe managed through like a load balancing process or some way to get the egress charges minimized. A lot of the time you need to basically make sure effective auditing, effective tagging has been put in place on your files, your data that you're looking to transfer, because ultimately whenever you're trying to attribute the egress charges for the different for your different SKUs, at the same time having that auditing in place will help you manage those processes better, for especially regular processes. So this is something that I see a lot of in more the database world, I would say, like with some of the multi-regional databases that that we now have in the GCP world, particularly with like some of the spanner processes that you see nowadays. I mean, at the end of the day, having the effective auditing in place for that can be really useful in terms of debugging any egress processes that you have running and making sure that this can be managed more effectively. So effective tagging and effective auditability on your egress, any egress processes that you have running, is going to be quite big for managing egress costs and minimizing those going forward in any cloud, so AWS or GCP. So yeah, we see this every day in a lot of customer use cases.
Are there any like best practices specific to data transfer? Because I, you know, Sam, we did a webinar, I think a year ago, on cost allocation. You talked about general tags that are good to have set up, but I'm wondering if there are any best practices that you can apply with tagging just to this use case of data transfers. Types of tags, et cetera.
One of the hardest things in a lot of clouds is that data transfer can't be tagged, depending on the product. But for the most part, you can't actually tag the amount of data or the reason for it, right? And you certainly can't do it on the fly and say, this is for job number three for customer number four. So it really comes down, in my opinion, and I'd love to hear the other guys' thoughts. It comes down to a good account setup or organization setup so that each workload has its own boundaries. And then you can say everything related to that workload can be attributed to that project or account, depending which cloud provider you're using. Unfortunately, that doesn't help you so much if your web front end is pulling data from your web back end and they're in two different accounts. All you can see is there's stuff going out of one and into the other. It's not yet ideal. You can get analytics like that. You can do things like VPC flow logs and all sorts of horrible things, but that's not cost tagging and it's not fun. It's okay for performance analysis, sure. But I'd love to know if the guys have any other good ways of getting information on data transfer.
I mean, only thing I've seen is mostly if you're able to tag like your data processes, maybe you got like Airflow running, you're able to tag this DAG is XYZ process. And then you're able to look and say, okay, it runs at this time. And this, during this day, we allocated this much cost to it. And we also saw during the same period of time, oh, we've got this much egress cost. You're able to kind of narrow it down a little bit better on that. Or maybe you're running BigQuery queries, you tag a query and you see it costs this much money, and then you say, wait a second, we had 6 gigabytes moved across regions, and you're able to determine, oh, wait a second, maybe I'm pulling from a different region. You're able to kind of put two and two together. And like I said, Sam, there's not a great way to do it, and then, I mean, I wish there was much better ways across the board, but it's kind of a prize being detective essentially is what it is. It's doable, but it makes it easier than doing like a VPC flow log, which, yeah, you know, like you said, they suck. Plain simple.
And it can also be expensive, I think.
I was going to mostly speak from the GCP side, but you can do resource tagging and things like that. It's not perfect by any means, as Sal was alluding to. It's very, immature, you'd call it at the moment. But like I say, so you do have to still do a bit of detective work here and there, but you can still put tagging at project level, resource level, in places to maybe find out exactly kind of where something broadly came from. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, a complete cost allocation is going to be tricky for tagging. It's just something that maybe will help minimize any cost issues, and also help you track things if things get out of hand, as you often see with egress charges.
And that stuff gets harder and harder when people are containerizing workloads and bin packing stuff, right? So that setup where you did have one EC2 instance running in one account or one GCE VM running in a single project, and it was just doing one thing and work, that's simple enough to say that's my cost for that thing. But now I'm running 30 different things on 20 different nodes in an EKS cluster. Good luck with that.
Yeah, and also just to your point when you said like having a proper like hierarchy and stuff in place, I think having a tagging strategy and like enforcing some type of tagging policies and stuff early on is very important. So if you grow and scale, like with hyper growth startups and stuff, like they are just busy building the product and they don't sometimes keep the house in order. And then later on when it's costs, yeah, it's not great when you need to pay the bill. But yeah, also with the container stuff earlier, you can only do so much. You can also tag on specific resource instance levels, but at the end of the day, like you need to, when it comes to application level, that's, yeah, especially with Kubernetes and stuff, that's difficult to easily get visibility into it. Yeah.
I think to wrap up, we have some rapid fire topics, right? Some things with spanners, some things with BigQuery multi-region egress. Sam, I think you wanted to bring up also something around NAT gateways. Why don't we start with Spanner here?
All right. So by the time this thing's published here, we will have been in the new world of additions for Spanner as well. One of the big things that is in the FAQs and in the MSA you'll probably receive is it talks about how the compute's going to go down massively, and you're looking, hey, that's awesome. This is our egress podcast here, so we got to tell you about the egress charges. You may see a nice little chart in those things that talk about going for replication. In the past, they charged a very small fee. It was like one US cent replication per gigabytes. And in this case, it is gigabyte, not gigabyte, like on the others, as they call out for once in the Google documentation. But it was just a big thing. If you ever heard me talk about this on a call, you know it's a big thing I have a problem with. But they tell you it goes 1 cent for it, for 1 gigabyte. Now they're raising that cost between 4 and 17 times, depending on the replication you're going to. Spanner, it's an amazing database. And the big selling point is it can replicate, keep everything intact across multi-regions. So if you're running something in EMEA, North America, and APAC, it can keep everything consistent very quickly and very effectively. Problem is now you're going to be paying for that data being replicated. You make a change in North America, it's going to replicate to EMEA into APAC as well. It's going to cost you a lot more money on doing that. And that's the hidden cost that, unfortunately, there's not a way to determine at the billing level or the metric level currently on how much that costs. It's just a hidden cost that's built to you currently in pre-editions. It was built to your node, so it was not broken out. So it's impossible to guesstimate it. Or I'm sorry, it's possible to get a true actual value. You got to guesstimate it. So that is something I recommend looking at. And look at that chart and just realize if you've got something between multiple regions, it's going to start hitting you on that. We no word yet if there's a SKU, because we're recording this before it's officially announced, so we don't know what the SKU is going to be. They may have got the SKU on the 31st when this comes out. So something to be aware of, and just watch out for that hitting you.
And the thing I'd add as a fellow GCPer is one of the main use cases of Spanner that's always sold to people is the fact it's a global database. So pretty much one of the main use cases of Spanner is now going to make it a more expensive solution for a lot of our Spanner users, especially when there's any multi-region application going on. Like even in the same country, as you were alluding to, Sale, the prices of replication are going up at almost fourfold at best, if not 17 times the price. So a lot of the use cases that you previously had for Spanner and are becoming a heck of a lot more expensive. So stay tuned for our announcements on that for sure.
This was something that was already announced. So it was BigQuery multi-region egress charges. Was this like a couple months ago? Was this a quarter ago?
I think that was back in, it goes into effect on October 21st. I'm not sure when the announcement was, but.
Okay.
Yeah. Essentially what it means is that going forward, they're going to start billing you for egress outside of the region on BigQuery. So if you're reading from US West 1 and you're, or I'm sorry, let me go back and put it in more BigQuery terms. You've got the US or EU multi-region. if you're reading from, say, US West 1 from the US Vulture region, they're going to bill you for that egress charges now, which they didn't in the past. Or Trevor, maybe you want to correct me, it's for the EU multi-region, it's EU West 4 is where is the synonymous region. So BigQuery, they call it the multi-region, is tied to a region. US, it's US Central 1, EU, it's EU West 4, which is where the data will be stored. So if you're reading from those two in the multi-regions, you're fine. But if you're reading outside of that, they're going to start billing.
And one of the big selling points of GCP in the past, of BigQuery, should I say, in the past, was that those processes were free. So we had a lot of customers that were, again, doing those kind of processes, which this kind of new charge is going to be a bit of a phantom to a lot of our customers that are experiencing this. So yeah, this is quite a big change. And we're actually looking at, we're going to be sending something out to our affected customers on that very soon as well.
And also note, these are in addition to any sort of GCS access charges, retrieval charges, everything else too.
Yeah, I'm curious, actually, I forgot to ask with the last question, but how have you been advising customers? Well, I guess you can't, we haven't talked to any customers about Spanner yet, but what would you plan to how would you plan to evaluate this? And same thing, the BigQuery egress charges you just mentioned.
We have a plan to communicate out to all our affected customers to begin with, but also we're going to be putting out a lot of communications to our wider customer base as well to help those that may want to consider Spanner in the future and BigQuery in the future for any additional costs such as this. So we are going to be going quite big on communications. There will be a blog post published as well around these topics as well, just to keep our customers aware as well. So there's going to be a heck of a lot of content within this space on BigQuery and these Spanner charges. So yeah, we're going to be basically taking a multi-pronged approach for advising our customers on this. Is there anything missed there, Sam?
Yeah, nope. And if you're a customer, we have a group of series that are very up to date on everything going on. So if you open a ticket with this, be myself, Matt, or a couple other people across the world that will jump onto calls and help you out with it. We've been watching this and we'll be able to advise you when we can. I mean, some cases, the data is just not available. So we can only give you a guesstimate on how much it'll cost you because the data is just not there. But we're going to be fully up to date on how everything works and be able to help you out and get you the best estimate possible and help you move forward on everything.
Sam, maybe take us home. You mentioned something that you've observed with NAT gateways. And
yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it comes up quite a lot in the discussions we have with AWS customers, and that is that data transfer itself, I think it's too expensive. I think it's quite reasonable. But what is very expensive is traffic put through a NAT gateway on AWS. So really quickly, for those that aren't aware, normally traffic out to the web on AWS goes through an internet gateway, and the traffic out in the out direction is free. Not free, but it's at a lower cost. When you want to have a private network that can talk to the internet, you need to route that traffic through a NAT gateway. And reasons you might do that, the simple versions would be like operating system patches or updates. But there's lots of things that you might want to do. When you're sending that data through a NAT gateway, in addition to the actual data transfer cost of the gigabytes to the web, you also have a data processing charge, which is quite high. The NAT gateway itself is cheap to run. The data processing is really expensive. To give you some sort of idea, I think it's about 4.5 cents per gigabyte processed. So it doesn't matter whether that's in or out. 4.5 cents for each gigabyte. There's a project on the web. It's on GitHub. You can find it under the Chime company, not to be confused with Amazon Chime, nothing to do with them. But it's a product called Alternat, like alternate, except without the E on the end. And essentially what they've done is created a managed NAT setup using EC2 instances. So therefore you run your own instances and you don't pay for the data processing costs. And then there's a whole lot of automation around it to firstly make sure that if there's any problem, they get replaced and so on, but also to fall back to the AWS NAT gateways in the case that something goes wrong and it can't be fixed. So it's a really cool setup, and we've been using it with a number of customers. And just sort of with the data that's on their webpage and the README, if you're sending about 10 terabytes a month through a NAT gateway, then it's saving sort of 45% of the costs of that data transfer. So, I mean, it's a serious amount of money. That would be sort of a few, maybe $1,000 a month if you're sending that much data in and out, and including using the gateways. By doing that with a C6 type instance with a nice quick network card like the C6 GN, then you bring that down to about $500. So it's a nice saving. It's a pretty cool tool. And I'm always a function of over-engineering, always a fan, sorry, of over-engineering things. So I love playing with stuff like that.
All righty. So I think that's about it for time. We're gonna cut all this into clips as well. So you can also go through it kind of as a playlist, go through each of the kind of the anti-patterns and what to do. Thanks everyone for joining. Sale and Matthew once again. Louis, hope this isn't the first time. Just the first time. Last time, sorry. I can't talk. It's 8 p.m. over here. It's 8 p.m. over here. No, keep it in. Keep that in. It's end of the day. Hope you enjoyed everything minus this last minute. And see you for the next episode. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Bye, y'all.
You got to be authentic. I'm surprised you didn't say, Sam, I'm surprised we talked about tagging. We're like, I'm the FinOps guy. Speaking of FinOps.